The North Woods of Wisconsin often represent peace and calm and pristine wilderness for those of us who seek them out. But in the Loon Lake Fishing Mystery Series, those woods can also be a dangerous place. Author Victoria Houston fishes and writes in those same North Woods, and she's created a cast of characters that so many of us have come to think of as neighbors we enjoy spending time with. She's with us today to talk about her books, including her latest, which is Dead Little Hustler. And Victoria, welcome to the program.
Well, good morning.
It's
nice to be here, Larry.
Well, it's great to have you back.
Thank you.
It's been a little while, and it's nice to be able to hear your voice again.
Thanks a lot.
Well, I want to give our listeners a chance to join in, too. And maybe as you listen, maybe you've read some of Victoria's books, or like me, all of them. I think I missed one. There's one I haven't read yet. Wondering what you enjoy about those books, or maybe you're an aspiring writer who could use some encouragement, or maybe you're just curious about the process that writers like Victoria go through to create their works. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org, or you can post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you can post your questions or comments there. Dead Little Hustler is the 14th installment in the Loon Lake Fishing Mystery Series. And did you ever imagine when you were writing that first book, Dead Angler, that you're going to be living with and writing about these characters more than a decade, for sure?
Absolutely not. In fact, I think if I had known that, I would probably have had a permanent panic attack. But what I do remember vividly is turning in the very first book to my agent. She got back to me, and she said, you know, she'd been very critical earlier, my earlier attempts, but this time she said, this one's okay, but publishers like series. Do you think you could write some more using these same characters? And I felt great to hear that because I'd really sort of grown to like these three people that recur in all the books.
Yeah.
And I thought, as I had first sent her the manuscript, I thought, oh, darn, now I have to make up more people. And so my joke is all it took was one glass of wine. And I had ideas for the next two books in the series. Yep.
Well, I'm telling you, those are really endearing characters. I mean, you really... Lou and Doc and Ray are just people that, God, I'd like to know those people.
Well, thanks. You know, I get a kick out of a couple things that people have said to me over the years. One is I've had at least two women come up to me, assuming that the character Ray Pratt is real, and they'll say, name and phone number. I'll support that guy. Oh, golly. And then another comment I get pretty often is, and surprisingly enough, I get this from more men than women. They're very concerned about the relationship between the police chief, Lou Ellen Ferris, and the retired dentist, Dr. Paul Osborne. They're very concerned about how things are going to go. But one man took me aside, an older guy, and he said, you know, you really do understand the love life of the older man. So I thought that was pretty cute.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. Well, I think maybe you do.
Well, I hope so, but we better make sure that the listeners know that these are not romance novels.
No, they're not.
This is murder, mayhem, and fishing in the North Woods.
I love it. And by the way, just to go back to Ray Pratt and women wanting his phone number, Ray Pratt is... a figment of your imagination, but somewhat based on some people, isn't he?
Well, everybody is. I mean, you know, my quote is always the one from Willa Cather, who said, writers write from the memories they have from before the age of 13. So my three main characters in particular are really distilled from memories of real people. And Ray, I have a brother who was a fishing guide, who ran a bait shop, who early in his life, when money was tight, dug graves for a living. And many years ago, he wore a stuffed fish on his head. And but I also have a couple cousins out of Stevens Point that, you know, have been equally bad actors over the years. These guys all tell really bad jokes and stuff. And so that character is really distilled from who they were in their, really, I always think of them in their sort of mid-20s.
Yeah, well, that I can see that for sure. And Doc Osborne is probably some relatives.
Well, my dad was a dentist. My grandfather was a dentist. My uncle was a dentist. I worked in the dental office as a teenager. So Doc Osborne is really, again, distilled from the memories of three men that, you know, I can hear their voices so well. And growing up around them, of course, you know, they go through all the different ups and downs of life. And so I sort of invest Doc Osborne with a lot of the issues that these people had to deal with and a lot of the pleasures.
Yeah, and Llewellyn Ferris?
Well, then I have a joke. She is distilled from the memories of a favorite high school teacher of mine who is a fanatic fisherman, and then two girls in my neighborhood when I was growing up who were about 5 years older, and they used to beat me up all the time. And I think as they went through life and had different careers, my thinking has always been that those two women beat people up all their lives, for heaven's sake. So that's where Llewellyn Ferris comes from.
Well,
a little kinder, however.
A little kinder, for sure, but powerful.
You know, one of the things that I have felt very good about is I've had at least four different individuals who are in law enforcement who really like the books.
Oh.
And, you know, that makes you feel good because you are writing a police procedural without getting as technical as some writers do. So it feels good that they, you know, are comfortable with my stories.
Do you do a fair amount of research? Do you talk with those folks when you're, or have you in the past, when you're putting together a story?
Not really. No? What I really do is, you know, I just am a fanatic newspaper reader. So I am reading the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post daily, along with, of course, our local newspapers. And so the crimes that background my stories, I really take from those articles, which have usually been well-researched by, you know, good reporters. And the thing is that I have this fictional Loon Lake in my head, along with the fictional Loon Lake Police Department. And if I were to talk to real people, I think all of a sudden I find myself feeling a little constrained by reality. So, you know.
You know, that's a good, very good point.
You know, and I kind of, as I write the books, I've done two things. Number one, I always think about setting the story about 2 years ago. So we have cell phones, we have DNA, we have things that, you know, we can lay hands on these days.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you may have noticed, too, I don't age my characters.
No.
Well, we don't want to get into Viagra territory. So, you know, it's kind of a back and forth there. And yet, when it comes to police work, I think it, you know, it still involves basic human nature and the kinds of things that go with, you know, social work, anytime you're dealing with people with problems. So.
Yeah. I'm glad you don't age your characters.
Well, I made that decision based on experiences I had years ago when I worked in book publishing and I worked with a number of cartoonists, and they had to make that decision. And some of them chose to age their characters, and then, you know, they didn't know that they were still going to be drawing their comic strip 10, 15 years later, and all of a sudden it becomes problematic. A good example would be Gary Trudeau and Doonesbury. He started to age them, and then he stopped. And Kathy, she never changed. And, of course, the Far Side, all those animals are still the same age.
Yeah, and then a cartoon like Luann. Now they're graduating from high school and are going on to other things.
Right, right. So you know, you got to kind of make some decisions as you go along.
Well, what was your by the way, the titles, we should just mention that all your titles start with Dad, and then you use a fishing lure.
I do. The name of a fishing lure or a trout fly.
Yes.
So the Little Hustler is really what we call a musky swim jig. And it's something that, you know, Ray was using at some point in the story. So the titles aren't any big clue to who killed who. But it's just kind of fun to find the title. And I have to have the title before I start the book, which is interesting, too.
You do?
Yeah, yeah.
And I imagine people are always saying, oh, use this lure or that lure.
No. What people say to me is, put my name in the book and I don't care if I'm the murderer. And I cannot tell you how many people want to be in a book. But I don't do that, again, because names are important to me. When I use names, and especially with secondary characters in the story, I sort of need a name that helps me see the individual
person
that I'm, you know, conjuring up there.
Victoria Houston, our guest today. I was actually, Jackie Michard used me as myself in one of her novels, which was kind of fun. I actually had a lot of comment about it. Victoria Houston, our guest, though, she has not used my name, but that's all right because she's used some other wonderful names in her series. She'll be with us until 12:30. You stay with us. You know, there's something magical about the North Woods of Wisconsin. Just thinking about those woods, you can give you a kind of a sense of calm and peacefulness. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today as we visit with author Victoria Houston. She revels in those woods as well, but she also has us looking over our shoulders when we read her Loon Lake Fishing Mysteries series of books. The most recent installment is Dead Little Hustler. Fine book, and like the books before it, it is a great read. And Victoria, thank you again for spending time with us today.
Well, I'm very happy to, and thank you for all the nice words, Larry.
Oh, well, it's a pleasure. There, you earned those words and more. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. Maybe you've read some of Victoria's books, or maybe all of them. What do you enjoy about them? Comments about that? Are you an aspiring writer and want some encouragement or maybe some tips? You can do that as well by calling us at 1-800-642-1234, email us at talk@wpr.org, or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Really looking forward to hearing from you. Daniel and posted a note on Facebook. I talked about aspiring writers. He said, I like to refer to myself as a perspiring writer. I've been working on a memoir for many years, mostly for the benefit of recording my family's history and for the bonus therapy benefit. It's a marketable story, however, but I can't seem to stop revising it. When do I turn my baby over to a professional? Please help.
Well, you know, that's sort of along with the question I get often, which is, do I ever get writer's block? And my answer is absolutely not. I can't afford it because I have a contract and I have a deadline. And I think that a lot of people do run into that sort of issue of revising and revising. But there just comes a point, if you are due to deliver a manuscript, you can only revise so much. And I also have the backup of my line editor and my copy editor, who are also going to weigh in with an opinion on the content. So I don't feel like I'm necessarily the very last set of eyes on mm-hmm. the story. Realistically, I find I always go back when I start to work in the morning. I go back several days worth of work. And every time I do that, I come through, I'm still revising. Usually I'm taking out adjectives and adverbs.
Yeah.
And then I move the story forward. So I would say I probably go over each section a good 7 or 8 times. But then there's a point where I'm satisfied and I keep going. For one thing, I know I'm not perfect. So I'm not going to sit there and try to be perfect.
Yeah. Well, you do. One of the interesting things about your books, I think, is you're always introducing us to kind of new things and then a lot of times things that are of current issues, which I like.
Well, and it's what makes it interesting for me. I know, for example, this new book, what inspired it was, you know, all the news stories about the fact that they have discovered 11 different marijuana plantations in our Wisconsin National Forest.
Yeah.
And then they had the one up in the Hayward area where they had a gentleman who kept buying a lot of groceries and had difficulty with the English language. And finally somebody said, you know, because once again, in the North Woods and these small towns, you know, everybody kind of knows everybody.
Yeah.
And so finally somebody was kind of mystified by this and followed this guy and discovered there was a, you know, big marijuana growing operation going. He was buying the groceries for the workers.
Yeah.
So I used that kind of, you know, those news stories were a good spur.
You know, well, another thing that you did, and Roberta in Waukesha, I'm going to get to you in just a second here, but in Dead Little Hustler, you took a look at a Japanese form of fly fishing that I thought was, I didn't know anything about it. Tenkara, is it?
Tenkara. Yes, it's just, you know, sort of come to the forefront in the last couple of years. And just as I wrapped up the book, I was happy to see there was a profile in the Wall Street Journal of one of the senior family members of, what's the name of the company that, Orvis.
Yeah.
And he was interviewed. He's gotten into Tenkara, and he pointed out that their stores are carrying those rods and the special line that they use, that type of thing. So it's kind of a nice new, easier form of fly fishing for some people.
Yeah, maybe just in, give a quick, you know, sort of what's special about it and kind of what happens.
Well, basically they use just the one rod. You can carry it easily. It breaks down, and you can put it together, one line. There's no reel, and you're, you know, they never carry more than one or two trout flies. And the kind of the royal wolf is an American trout fly, which is just very similar to the one that the Japanese used. And so you're not wearing a fly fishing vest with, you know, 1,000 trout flies so that if you fall in the river, you drown because you got so much weight. And I'm kidding about that because they're very light. But anyway, it's just a very simplified version of fly fishing.
I thought of my old cane pole from back when I was a kid.
Very much so. And they sort of what they don't do then is they swing that trout fly out over the water. You're not having to deal with the issue of how good your cast is.
Yep.
It's almost, you know, to my mind, it's almost like a long rod with a jig on the end.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And why did you decide to include it in Dead Little Hustler?
Well, I read about it in Trout magazine, and I thought it sounded like really neat. And one of the things I run into with fly fishing is you can make it incredibly technical.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of a nice way to get away from that, and you don't have to be a PhD engineer to get into fly fishing from this angle. Also, another thing that I thought was interesting about it is you can fish in smaller water. You can have a smaller stream. You don't need the wide open spaces.
Let's take a call. Roberta in Waukesha, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to make the comment that I really enjoyed Victoria's books. And when I read them, I have a map of northern Wisconsin out,
dear.
I'm trying to figure out where these people are because she's talking about going between towns and there's all the lakes. And I know it's not really there, but it is.
Well, thanks. You know, yes, my Loon Lake is very fictional. There are 14 Loon Lakes in Wisconsin, but none of those 14 are mine. And once I had a very angry email from a reader who said she would never read another one of my books because I had placed a casino on Highway 45. And she knows darn well there's no casino on Highway 45. And so I answered her. I said, please, please consider the F word, fiction.
Well, thank you for your books. They're so enjoyable.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, that's funny. Well, it's kind of like Lake Wobegon, you know. I'm sure the same thing happens in Minnesota.
Oh, I'm sure. And the thing is, the reason I have to make it fictional is if I did it in real, you know, with the real towns and the real distances, you know, my poor characters, they'd be driving forever. And someone, when I first started writing the mysteries, made a comment to me. This is a devoted mystery reader. And she said, you know, I get so tired of reading these books where so much is happening, but these characters never have a chance to eat lunch, you know, or get a good night's sleep. And I know I stopped reading one writer when her character was in a bad car accident. She was put in the hospital, and, she, I mean, you know, she's really messed up, but she was out in a day. And I thought, let's be real here. So I try to set things up so that, you know, I'm not going to box the characters in time-wise and that type of thing.
Victoria Houston, our guest, you may have a question or comment for her as we move along today. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. Well, set the stage for us, for our listeners, for this latest, Dead Little Hustler. Kind of what's the story outline here?
Well, we don't want to give away too much, Larry.
Nope.
But it's set in the, you know, the heat of the summer, and there is an individual who's going out with his Tenkara rod, and he's thoroughly enjoying the day, when suddenly he's killed with a gunshot. And so it's very mysterious for the people in Loon Lake, for the police, and for Chief Harris's friends to try to figure out why on earth someone would have killed such an innocent person. And in the process of exploring, you know, what the situation might be, they also run into the wolf and what effect and, you know, are wolves going to play a role in this story? And in the meantime, they've also got some things going on in their personal life. Dr. Osborne has a grandson who's very ill with spinal meningitis, and so different characters are surfacing because of these different elements, and they all kind of weave together.
Yeah.
And that is as much as I will tell you.
Yeah, they certainly do weave together. But I'm telling you that that killing of the of that per individual, that came as a shock when I was reading that.
Good.
I mean, I should have known, but I should have known you were going to pull that on me.
Well, I'm going to pull something on you for sure. So, Larry, can I say something sort of self-promotional?
Absolutely.
Well, first of all, I'd love for your listeners to know I'll be at Yonkey's Bookstore in Wausau on August 1st in the morning from 10 to 12. And the other thing I wanted to point out is that the Book World stores around the state have been so good. They are carrying all those previous mysteries. They're carrying them all in a new edition. So there are plenty of books out there.
I'm telling you, and every single one? Because there's one that I haven't read yet.
Well, all the Book World stores where I've done book signings, and I've done like 12, maybe 15, they all have them. And if somebody doesn't have them, they can certainly order them.
Yeah, they can order them. Because I got started in, I don't forget when you and I first talked, but it was sort of in the middle of the series maybe, and then I went back and got copies of the earlier ones just because I liked the characters so much.
Well, if you'll go to my website, or if there's another website called Fantastic Fiction, and you can see the whole list in order. And now I don't feel like people have to read them in order, because
no.
I really knock myself out to introduce those characters in a new way each time. So you're never missing a clue. But you can see the series. You can check off what you own, and God forbid you buy a copy of something you already own.
You talk, this one's set in the heat of summer. You like to switch up on the seasons.
I do. The book I'm working on right now is set in the wintertime. And as you know, we had a heck of a winter this last year. So I am having no problem coming up with, you know, icy sidewalks, cold air, 30 below zero, that kind of thing. And it's fun. That's what makes just living up here fun.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, you live in Wausau area.
Right? I live in Rhinelander.
Or Rhinelander, excuse me.
Yep. And you know, it's funny. At a book signing recently, someone asked me, knowing that I used to live and work in New York City in the book publishing industry, you know, why I would move back here. Well, first of all, I grew up here. So I grew up in the fishing culture, and I've fished since I was a kid. But the other thing is that I said to them is, when you've worked in a city, whether it's New York or Los Angeles or Kansas City, whatever, Minneapolis, what's remarkable up here is the serenity, the quiet.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're absolutely right about that. And Rhinelander, it can be pretty non-quiet.
Yes.
At this time of the year, for sure. But it's even in the busiest times of the year, in the evening and looking out on one of those lakes, pretty darn calm and peaceful, isn't it?
Just beautiful. The silence is wonderful.
And you know, when I said Wausau, what I probably had in the back of my mind was the boys from Wausau. That always,
yeah.
That's a group of, or at least one of those individuals is reappears in practically every book, it seems.
Well, the Wausau boys, you know, are connected with the crime lab, which I made up, not knowing there was a crime lab, really, in Wausau. I thought I would be, you know, home free, because I turned them into pretty unpleasant people, with the exception of one by the name of Bruce.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. But, yeah, the Wausau boys, you know, because when there's a serious murder and DNA and some of these things are needed, the little town of Loon Lake doesn't have those facilities. So Lou Ferris, you know, against her wishes, has to work with the Wausau boys.
Have you ever gotten any comment from the real Wausau boys?
Well, actually, two things. One person who came to a book signing, and this was maybe 10 years ago, said, you know, they really like that. And then, but I'm not sure she's right, because then another person came and said most of the people working at the crime lab were women. So I thought that was interesting. And then I have one reader that I've met with a couple times. She's an expert, and she was connected to the Wausau crime lab, and she was very helpful. So the bad Wausau guys are totally a fictional element.
that's good to know, I guess. I'm glad that the real Wausau boys aren't mad at you.
Well, in case people wonder where that comes from, my former husband was an investigative reporter on the East Coast who covered a lot of murders. And so it was like just observing his work, all of the dysfunction within different law enforcement groups, within the medical examiners, the reporters themselves. You know, I got a really good picture of, you know, just how rough it can be for these people to try to work together.
You have, by the way, you were mentioning a book event earlier, but you have one coming up this Saturday in Marquette, Michigan, do you not, or am I wrong?
I do. No, I'll be in Marquette at the Book World from 10 to 12, and then I will be up in Houghton that afternoon from 4 to 6. So if people want to come in off the lake, I'll be there.
Wait, now, run the date again. It's
Saturday, which is the 26th I'll be at the Book World in Marquette in the morning and the Book World in Houghton in the late afternoon.
Okay, there you go. You mentioned earlier that you're writing in the morning. Is that typically what you do? Do you write?
I do. I try to. Well, first of all, I have to have an entire pot of coffee. And then I try to get a couple hours in first before anything else. It's when my thinking is the best, and B, then you feel like you've accomplished something for the day and you can go on and do other things. And when I say other things, usually I'll do some research, I'll be taking care of, different issues that come up when you're working in the book business, and then I'll do a little try to get a little time on the tennis court or with the fishing rod.
Oh, that sounds like a nice life.
It is not a bad life. I am so happy. Believe me.
Oh, man. Well, so, oh my God, I had another question for you, and it just flew out of my mind here.
Did it have anything to do with working in the morning?
It probably did. I'm sort of like you. I do my best work in the mornings.
I do, and I also, before I start work, I've usually read one or two of the newspapers that I mentioned earlier. I get the daily New York Times. I get it late, but I don't care because I get, sort of great clips out of that newspaper and the Wall Street Journal. And also two very different points of view, by the way, politically.
Yeah, absolutely. Rick on Facebook says, by the way, great show. I'm halfway through Dead Insider now. The contents of the butcher paper packages really got me.
Oh, and you know what? That's based on a real crime that happened in Chicago to the cousin of a woman who is one of my bridge partners.
Well, we won't go into it yet, but the contents of the butcher paper in that particular book, you want to read about it. We're not going to talk about it right here over the noon hour.
Not before lunchtime,
but he says, serves me right reading your books at night with most of the lights off in the house.
Ooh, I love to hear that.
Oh, man. Well, this latest book is sure a lot of fun to read, and I was so glad to see you've continued your character development and bringing those folks to life once again was a real treat for me, and I'm sure it is for everybody who reads your books.
Well, thank you, Larry.
I hope we have a chance to do it. When's your next book come? Well, it's going to be a while before your next one comes out.
Well, I have a November 1st deadline, so I'm waking up every morning and with a mild panic attack and wondering who did it, because I never know myself for sure till I'm in, halfway through a book, the murderer is.
Oh.
Yeah, so I'm very much in shaky ground right now. But it's due November 1st, so there'll be a new book out next spring.
Well, I'm sure we'll be talking then. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Victoria Houston, she's going to be at the Book World in Marquette, Michigan this coming Saturday from 10 to noon. That's on Washington Street in Marquette, Michigan. A lot of fun to talk with her, and I really do enjoy her characters. They are they're like old friends to me, and maybe they are to you too. If you've read any of her books, I think you're going to understand what I'm talking about. Tomorrow, oh man, it's Friday. Garden Talk. We'll be making sure you get the information you need to keep your garden thriving this summer and fall. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.